And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Debbie Kay from Rancho Bernardo.
Hi, my name's Debbie. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date, September 6, 2006. My sponsor is Clancy I from Venice. My home group is the Tuesday night speakers meeting in Escondido. And I sponsor two new girls right now. I want to welcome the people that identified as new, Joe and Christopher, and anybody that's new that didn't identify. I didn't always identify. I should have. When I tell my story, I have a lot of examples of, like, wow, you could have done that better. But I just try and tell the truth in what I do today. There were things I was doing that that I stayed sober and, I was born in the 60s. I have two parents. They're still married. I had a relatively normal childhood. I grew up in Escondido. My dad was a contractor. He built us a house in sort of an undeveloped area of Escondido. I grew up going to public schools. I have three younger sisters. None of them are alcoholics. They're not against drinking. They've all drank at one time or another, and I don't know why they don't drink more, or it just doesn't. I have this one sister, and she was engaged to a guy, and she broke up with him, and she called me, and she was having a Sierra Nevada, one of those, like, impress you beers or something, and she got through her, she got like halfway through the second and she just stopped, and it was like, oh my gosh, you're in all this emotional pain. I didn't like want to encourage her to drink, but at that point I realized alcohol does something for me that it doesn't do for other people. So I have three sisters. They aren't alcoholics. I have an alcoholic grandfather. He was one of those guys. He was a bricklayer that drank and was real violent, but went to work every day. And I'm like a not go to work every day drinker. And the violence ebbs and flows. And so my drinking's real unpredictable. You just don't know what you're going to get. You may get sad. You may get happy. You may get no consequences. You may get, oh, I bit your hand. So I grew up in Escondido, and I had a relatively normal childhood. I remember wanting to be a lot more popular than I was. And then I don't know what happened, but when I got to be about 13, I started spending a lot of time reading books and wanting to listen to music alone in my room. And I still had friends. I still, you know, went shopping and spent time on the phones, but I became sort of like, I remember in junior high, somebody wanted to take my photo for the yearbook, you know, when I was in the library, like, oh, scenes on campus. And I was just like, no, I don't want my photo in the yearbook. I don't want to be a part of any club. That's like, I'm 53, and that's like still a part of me. I don't know. It's AA is, I've had to join AA, and it's been totally against my nature, and I don't know how or why this developed. So I don't worry about it too much. I just take the right action. And so I had my first drink when I was, I think I was 16. I was home alone. Nobody was calling me up to go to a party. I wasn't real impressed with the drug culture. I didn't listen to Pink Floyd, but there was something about alcohol that, I don't know. So I drank some red wine at home, and it did nothing for me. I'm not one of those people where my first drink was like, you know, oh, I found it at last. It did nothing for me, and I was really disappointed. And sometime later, it might have been a few weeks, I drank some of my dad's Wild Turkey. I got really like drunk sick, and I can only say for that it made me feel different. And then I started dating someone, and that I don't know why, but drinking was really helpful with that, because I was sort of an isolated, I want to be alone, and he would be invited to parties, so I would go, and I felt intimidated and, like, kind of inferior and not very self-confident. Maybe that's why I wanted to be alone all the time, I don't know. So it just made me feel like okay with myself when I drank. I started drinking, I guess for specifics, it was when MTV had just come out. And wine coolers like Bartles and James and California coolers were like really the new things. And so that those were my golden years as far as drinking goes, like MTV and California coolers. And I would go to my boyfriend's house and I would drink, and then he would take me home, and I wasn't craving more alcohol, but I knew I was going to do it again. And I just loved that the effect that alcohol was having on me. And but I didn't have to drink, if that makes sense. Anyway, I felt like alcohol was like finally giving me a life. In the Bill story in the Big Book, he says something like, I felt like I was suddenly part of life at last. And that's how I feel when I drink. I'll give you an example of that. Before I started drinking, when I did something bad and my parents wanted to ground me, they would take away my records so I wouldn't isolate in my room. After I started drinking, when I got in trouble, the way I'd get grounded was I wasn't able to leave the house. So alcohol was, I just felt like it was putting me in the stream of life. I started drinking. I guess my alcoholism progressed pretty quick. By the time I was 21, people were telling, and I was having consequences along the way, and I can deal with consequences. You know, I got a backbone. If I embarrass myself, you know. But anyway, like, the first consequence was my boyfriend and his friend holding me over like a toilet when I threw up at a party, and these are like people I want to impress, and it wouldn't occur to me like not to drink. It was just like, that's bad. And by the time I was 21, I don't know, I guess he got interested in somebody else. And so I did a geographic. I went to South Carolina. There was a real strict Christian school there, and I thought I'd reinvent myself as a college student. And when I told them about my drug history, they didn't want me. So then I went to I went to another Christian school in Nyack, New York, and I was like raised in Escondido, and I thought one of the reasons, I was an alcoholic, I just drank a lot, and I thought one of the reasons, because there's no culture in Escondido, you're like kind of deprived that way, and if I could go somewhere exciting like New York where there's just theater and musicals and just all such sorts of stuff going on all the time, that somehow it would make me happy and alcohol would just be a part of my life. But Anyway, that was the first time my drinking really scared me, because what I did was I went to this college dorm, and like I never left. Is all I did was, it was the summer, and I would take taxis to a liquor store, and then I would buy this stuff like the equivalent of Thunderbird. It was like Gallo Port, stuff like that. And I would bring it back to the dorm, and then I would just drink and pass out and wake up, and I would keep doing this back and forth. And then usually economics make me get sober. I don't get sober because I'm hurting people or because I usually economics get me sober. And so I was down to change, and I called my dad, and he had a psychiatrist who was on the board of some hospital. So I was flown back home, and I remember being on the airplane throwing food and thinking I was being cute. And I do a lot of like really obnoxious things when I'm drinking, and I think they're cute. And so I'm throwing airplane food, and I get home, and the guy sort of does an intake with me, and he asked me the weirdest question. He asked me how many aspirins I take when I have a headache, and I told him 8. And And he was like, oh, that's like an alcoholic thing. And it was like, that proves nothing, you know. And anyway, I went to this, plus he's on the board of this hospital, and it's super expensive, so I'm sort of like, I don't know. And so I went to, it was called the Sunrise Center, and I guess it was in Poway, and that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard him say the Serenity Prayer. That made me nervous. I'd been to church. I never heard that prayer there. I had a lot of trouble with hand tremors, too, when I got sober. I don't go to meetings as a newcomer and get cake and coffee. I don't even know why they offer it. It's like you need to be sober a while to have that stuff. Well, I mean, if you're like me, I just get really bad hand tremors. Or they need to have super big cups or something. And I like to fly under the radar. I'm not going to walk around like this. And so I did that. And then after I finished that program, I did the Salvation Army, which was just an excellent program. And then I did something which some speakers call, I tried to fix my alcoholism with normal living. Like, okay, if I just have a car and a job and a social life and a nice place to live, I won't want to drink. And what happened was, so basically I had, and I went to meetings, but I really wasn't doing anything else besides that. And I wasn't going to regular meetings. And then what happened was, I remember my mom told me, so anyway, I'm just coasting along, and I'm about 2 years sober, and I have no spiritual defense, but I don't know that. And my mom had said, oh, some other boyfriend used to know, he's getting married. And I was like, oh, that's good. And then we talked about something else, and I got in my car, and I drove, and I went to a liquor store in Mission Gorge, and I got another wine cooler. And I eventually moved on from the wine coolers. And So anyway, that's usually what my drinking looks like. My drinking doesn't look like, you know, me screaming, I want to drink, I don't want to drink. It's usually me just going, I'm just going to the liquor store now. It's just like the most passive thing in the world. Anyway, so I need a spiritual defense from that, and that's why I participate, and I have a program in Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, the next period of my life was just sort of entry-level jobs and being in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went through Serenity House. I went through 1111 Island Street. I went through the seven-day program. I went through a couple different recovery homes, and I would just always end up drinking again. I've never gotten a 502. That's where they pull you over. One of the things that I heard when I came here was, like, if you're new and you're hearing, like, somebody say, oh, this horrendous thing happened to me, and you're like, oh, that didn't happen to me. One of the things I've heard here is don't be afraid of that happening to you. Don't be afraid of the yets. Be afraid of the agains. You know, whatever it is that sort of like made you want to take a look at your drinking, like, be afraid of that. And so, let me see. I was 30 years old, and I took another stint in another recovery home, and I stayed sober for about 10 years, and I moved to Orange County. And the first 5 years of it, I had a decent program, but I wasn't very good at. It was sort of like my program. This is what my program looks like. It means I go to regular meetings, and I've done a fourth and fifth step. But when I have a job and I hate it, my sponsor saying, don't quit till you have another job, I go ahead and quit that job, because he's well-meaning, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. And when my sponsor is speaking at a meeting and he says, you go up there and you be the 10-minute speaker, I say no. And when he says, so-and-so OD'd, you need to go to her funeral, I say no, because she liked that guy that I liked, and I don't like her, even though she just died. And so anyway, that's sort of what my program looks like. It was my program. And anyway, that sponsor died, and I moved. I had lost the job, so I moved back to Escondido. And my story is just like weird and stupid, so I'll just tell it. What happened was I got involved in a 12-step food program, and I started losing weight in it, and I got to like a really unhealthy weight. And then what happened was like nobody in that food program would sponsor, and I was still going to AA, and nobody in that food program would sponsor me. And I was doing my own program again, and I ended up not being able to stay abstinent in that program, and I rapidly gained about 100 pounds in 6 months. And I was really embarrassed going to AA meetings. It's really embarrassing when you're putting on weight that fast, and it's humiliating. And so what I did was I wouldn't go to meetings in Escondido. I started going to meetings in North Park or Claremont, someplace people didn't know me and didn't see me. And I really wasn't a part of anything, and my response to everything was fine. And my program at this point consisted of regular meetings, no commitments, and a lot of journaling I called inventory taking. It was not inventory taking. It was journaling. It was self-indulgent journaling. And so anyway, I progressed, and then I got an idea. You know, if I drink some beer, maybe I'll stop eating so much. And beer's liquid bread, and so that sounds really dumb. But like when it comes to drinking alcohol, I'm just dumb. And so I went to a Joe and Charlie meeting at Claremont, that little place that's by the Serenity Shop. I'm sure it's still there. And I left the meeting. Somebody asked, an old timer, asked me how I was doing, and I said fine. And then I drove to Stater Brothers, and I got a half gallon of Bacardi and Coke. And I'd been sober 10 years, and I started drinking that. I couldn't handle hard liquor anymore. If you've been sober any period of time, and you go back to drinking, and you think you're going to go back to what you left, maybe you will. For me, it progressed, and my disease progressed. Like, physically, my body was changing even though I had been sober, and I could only handle, like, beer and wine, which was really embarrassing. And because those aren't... I don't know. So I would drink beer, and beer's cheaper than wine, so I usually just drank beer. And I had this job, and I would go to my job, and then I would just come home and drink. And I didn't drink every single night. I didn't go to bars anymore. I like to dance when I drink, and I'm a horrible dancer. And a very enthusiastic, vigorous dancer, and so it's just I used to go to jazzercise, and sometimes the instructors would just be like but it's like I'm paying my fees, so I have a right to be here. But anyway, bars were embarrassing, and also I didn't want to get a 502. On that 502 thing, though, my car did break down once on the 15 freeway, and I guess I felt like walking across the freeway one Saturday night just because it was there, and a policeman came, and I was taken to Las Colinas. So like I guess that's jail. I mean, they won't let you leave, and I don't know. Sometimes my bottom seems higher than it really was if you look at it. And so anyway, I drank for 9 months, and because I drank for 9 months, I didn't destroy my credit rating. I still kept my job, but like after I would drink in the morning, I would still be drunk. That's new. And I would be driving to work drunk in the morning, and I would be thinking, I can't be, I can't be drunk, you know. I stopped drinking like at 10 last night, but I was. And I would get to work, and when I drink, it's not very anonymous with me. I get the bloat, the puffy. I get the handshakes. I can't log into my computer. People see it, I think, and you can just tell there's something wrong with me. So anyway, what happened was it was the end of Labor Day weekend, and I had 3 days off. And at the end of my drinking, it wasn't. It was just a lot of isolated drinking, trying to control circumstances and keep my job. And so it was the end of Labor Day weekend, and the next morning my voice, it was slurring my words, so I couldn't call in. And I called my sister, who's a normie. And she came over to my house, and I remember her saying, "You're going to have to go back to AA, and you're going to have to make friends." I don't know why she said that. My sister's somebody who thinks, like, strangers are friends I haven't met. And I'm sort of like, strangers are enemies I don't want to know. And so my sister would be an excellent member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She likes to show up early and stay late and find out things about people and participate. And, you know, all those things, like, help keep me sober. And I've had to be, like, told to do them, like, this is going to help you. And they do. So anyway, that's what she said. And then I got into an outpatient program at Aurora Behavioral Health. When they did my intake, they said I had anxiety, depression, and alcoholism. I wasn't just alcoholic. And I had so much garbage in my system, I just didn't want to put any more pills or garbage in my system, so I didn't. And I didn't discuss that with them. So I did their inpatient thing, and I was in a lot of groups with people that had problems other than alcohol. And I had an apartment that I paid rent at, and I stayed at my mom's for a month. And my detox was really bad. It was I would hear music that wasn't there, like when the air conditioning was running. And I guess it was about the... It was like 2.5 nights. It was like 2 in the morning. I was on my mom's couch, and I started sweating really hard, and the music stopped, so that was good. And that's like on beer. So I did this Aurora thing, and I didn't feel very hopeful, like, going there. And so I started doing 90 meetings in 90 days in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to that meeting in Claremont by the Serenity Shop, and I ran into some guy who knew my former sponsor. He said she was in Oceanside. I drove up to the Oceanside Alano Club, you know, not that day, because I don't want to rush into getting well. And, you know, I mean, I want moderation in my recovery, nothing else. And so I she had sponsored me in San Clemente, and her name's Jean. She's still sober, like 45 years. And she told me Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program based on personal powerlessness. And she also told me she wouldn't sponsor me because she gave me her best shot. But she spent a lot of time with me. She, like, took me out to Coco's because I was newly sober, and I would meet her, like, every Wednesday at the Oceanside Alano Club, and we would just, like, talk about stuff that was bugging me, you know, noisy neighbors, you know, coworkers, stuff like that. And I started going to meetings. Oh, this was the other thing she told me. She said, don't talk about this time or last time or there may be a next time. Just get one sobriety date. The other thing is I was super willing when I got sober. I was willing to quit my job and move back to Orange County. I was willing to get out of Poway because I hated Poway. I was willing to do all this really good stuff. And she said, why don't you just be willing to make the only change you make this first year, just being getting sober? And even though she wasn't my sponsor, I followed that direction. I felt it was the voice of AA. So I just stayed in Poway, actually more than a year. She said, trying to make all those changes and getting sober may have been like sabotaging myself. So I stayed at the same job. What I did do, though, was I asked for a demotion to the mailroom, and I got it. It's a lot easier to get a demotion than a premotion. And but actually, I ran that before her, before I did it. I had taken a leave of work, and I was really embarrassed to go back. And maybe my current sponsor might say that wasn't the thing to do, but she was okay with it. And so I took this demotion to the mailroom, and so I would just do this. I listened to anyway. I would go to meetings at the Poway Alano Club, and I would work at this company in Poway in the mailroom, and I would listen to podcasts of speakers, and Clancy and other speakers, and Norm Alpe. I like him. I was listening to him tonight. And I sound nothing like Norm Alpe. And so I listened to these speaker tapes, and I got a sponsor. Her name was Ruth. She was at the Poway Alano Club. She went to church and AA, and I was like, well, why isn't church? I wanted what she had, and she was active, and I saw her at a lot of meetings, and she seemed comfortable being sober, and she agreed to sponsor me. She took me through the steps. I don't know. I told her I wanted to go on a diet. She said, don't go on. She said, don't do any of that until you do the steps first. What she said to me, she said, one demon at a time. And I think she must have had a lot of patience anyway. And I mean, I would like tell her about these other sponsors I had, trying to impress her. I mean, she must have been like so annoyed at me, sort of like, you want to do what I'm saying or not? And she would tell me to go to this Sunday night. Obviously something didn't work before, or I would have stayed sober. And I was just like, no, I understand the program. I've been sober before. Of course, I did drink again, but. Sobriety works when you don't drink again. And she told me to go to this Sunday night meeting. I don't know if you've ever been to a meeting where you share and then somebody else shares something and you can tell they're referencing your share in a critical way. Anyway, that happened to me at that meeting. And so I just didn't want to go to that meeting anymore. And that was like one of her directions I didn't follow. She did take me through the steps, and I just took the directions I thought were good from her. And when I got to be about 5 years sober, I was still at the same company. I'd gotten out in the mailroom. I really like never called her. If I saw her at a meeting, it was like a friendly thing, but that was about it. And While I was in the mailroom, somebody had sent in this payment in an envelope from the Midnight Mission, and I heard this speaker that I used to listen to say he worked at the Midnight Mission, so I, like, held on to this envelope for years, like, because I'm weird. And finally, at about 5 years, I was, like, home one night deciding if I wanted to go to a meeting or not, and I've always gone to meetings. I just didn't go to like regular SEP meetings. It was like, oh, if it's Thursday, do I feel like going to the speaker meeting or this tiny meeting over here? And I saw that envelope. I saw, write him a letter, say he's a good speaker, make his day, right? So this is like loser. So I know the guy's name is Clancy. So I'm just like, dear Clancy, I listened to your speaker. I don't know. I wrote this. It was like three quarters of the page, and I just ended up asking him to sponsor me. At this point, I knew I was going to drink again. I didn't want to drink. I guess I had been in and out. So I just knew I was like in this gray area to where it's like it's just coming down the road. It may be 2 weeks. It may be 6 months. But I'm going to drink again. And ad nauseum, and then, oh, another recovery home. Are you going to lose the job or not? It was just, and I asked him if he would sponsor me, and that was like Tuesday night. So the letter must have gone out Wednesday morning. Thursday afternoon, he called and he said he would. And then he asked me to go up to the Canyon Club to see him because he'd be speaking, and I met him. And I now try and go to the Pacific Group like once a month because that's his meeting. I didn't get sober in the Pacific Group. Pacific Group's a very strong meeting, very active meeting. I got sober in really lame meetings. I got sober in meetings where it was like seven people and sometimes the secretary didn't show up. I just was kind of freaked out when I was new, and I don't know. I was very attracted to weak meetings when I was new. The meetings I go to now are strong. And he said he would sponsor me, and I guess what Clancy taught me, which I didn't know I needed, was he taught me how to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is something I'm always thinking I just need to do another inventory. Like, I had this sponsor once, and she was like, you need to sponsor, and it was like, I need to do another inventory. Then when I feel better, I'll start sponsoring, you know? And what I've learned is you have to take the actions before you feel better. One of the first things Clancy had me do was, I don't know how he figured out I wasn't like a social butterfly because he wasn't going to meetings in Poway, but he wanted me to go up to people at meetings and introduce myself and say, hi, I'm Debbie. And I told him I wasn't really a people person, and then he laughed, and that's like a common thing people say in AA, I know now. And then I said, well, what am I supposed to, you know, say to them? And he was like, well, what you could say is, you know, I haven't had a drink today, and it wasn't always that way. And then I was also told, like, not to sit in the back part of the meeting. A lot of the meetings I go to, that's where all the people with time sit. But I spent, like, the whole first 5 years of my sobriety back there, so I kind of, like, used up that ticket. Another thing I was taught was if I go to a meeting and it's a strong meeting and I want to be there, I don't let anybody run me out of the meeting. If I do that, then I'm not practicing principles above personalities. I'm saying that that person is bigger than the power in the room that's keeping us all sober. I ended up getting a home group when I was about 7 years sober. I had a meeting I called my home group, but it really wasn't one. I got the Tuesday Escondido speakers meeting as my home group. The reason I got it was because I'm not very good at becoming a part of, and there were a lot of people there with commitments at the meeting, and I thought, this is good. I can get a job and be part of without having to be interesting. I don't need the light come up like with, oh, I just got back from Europe. I just need to have a job here and show up every week, and I can be a part of this. I have 5 regular meetings I go to. The first lady, she told me to go to regular meetings. I thought that meant go to meetings frequently, but it doesn't. It means go to regular meetings. Like, I have set meetings. Like Thursday, I'm always tired because it's the end of the week, and I always have the same meeting that week. I always have a meeting Saturday night. I usually end up going to more meetings than 5 just because I enjoy being in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. My life seems to run better the more I'm in meetings and with other alcoholics. So I guess I'll repeat what I was told. Go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Look around the room for somebody who has what you want, who looks like they're comfortable being sober. Ask them if they'll sponsor you. Get regular meetings, and then get a commitment at the meeting as like a way to give back to the meeting and be a contributor. You know, I'm not like a speaker. Like my Friday night meeting I was at last night, this lady, she was like, oh, I heard you're nervous about speaking. Where are you gonna speak? I said, Humul. I lied because, like, I was like, I don't show up. I don't need people seeing me embarrass myself. And then I'm like out and about today. I'm like, that's a lie. That's like a lie. And so anyway, I called her. Thank you. I called her at 5:30 and I left her a bizarre voicemail. I'm sure she thinks I'm in the real winner circle now. I'm just like, hi, this is Debbie. Last night I lied. I'm not going to be speaking in Hamul. We don't lie when we get, we don't lie in AA. And so that's how the day is gone. Anyway, this is how I feel about speaking. If you ask me to, I don't play the tuba. If you ask me to play the tuba to be sober, I'll play the tuba, you know. And my sponsor gave me a copy of Daily Reflections, and inside she wrote, Debbie, stay sober and you will have a good life. And I sponsor two girls now, and I know that if they stay sober, they're going to have a good life. I know that. That's a given. And I think one of the greatest things about sponsorship is you start realizing, oh, if that's true for them, then maybe it's true for me too. And so stay sober, and you will have a good life. Thanks.